On Wednesday, October 6th, I will be showing the documentary Ozone and the Politics of Medicine at the KGNU Studios in Boulder. It's always been important to know what is truly good for us, our families, and our communities. Healthcare is a personal choice, hopefully enhanced by public information. Today's guest, Saul Pressman, is an engineer of ozone equipment and a healthcare practitioner who, through his accumulated knowledge shared through his books, is helping many, many people worldwide. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Saul, thanks so much for joining us again today.
Hello, Robin. My pleasure.
Before we move into the political climate of ozone therapy for healthcare, we should give a little mini tutorial regarding the medicinal or therapeutic uses of ozone for folks who it might be new to.
All right. It's interesting to talk about ozone being new because it's been in use clinically for 125 years. You'd think by this time people would have gotten it. But that shows you the enormous power that governments have in order to suppress information. So here we are 125 years down the road, and still 98% of the people have not heard of ozone therapy. But in 28 countries around the world, it's standard medical practice. So imagine you go to England, and in England they just adopted ozone therapy in 2001 following a conference they had at the Imperial College. And you go there, and you go to a doctor, and he says, okay, we can do this, this, or this, but I think probably the best thing to do is ozone therapy. And you go, what's that? Because you have never heard of it. When I go to the world conferences, and doctors are there from those countries, these doctors have been practicing 30, 40, sometimes 50 years, and so old hat to them, almost to the point of boredom. It's such a standard thing. And what are you talking about? You can't use this in America. At any rate, there are over 18,000 doctors now around the world that give ozone therapy every day. If people want ozone therapy in America, mostly they're forced to do it themselves. Fortunately, ozone is such a safe substance that they can do self-treatment without any serious repercussions beyond the healing crisis, which is actually what we want. It's a long-standing, very safe therapy, and it's basically introducing energy into the body through a safe method. Nikola Tesla, back in 1900, said that getting electricity into the body is the best thing you can do for it, because it increases the energy of every cell. But he says you need a carrier, and the carrier for the electricity is oxygen. And so that's actually what you're doing. You're actually putting electricity into the body with the carrier of oxygen. So it's an electrotherapy. Now, everybody emphasizes the chemical aspect of it and the oxidation, et cetera, and on and on. But in reality, I think we really should be looking at it the same way as Tesla did, and look at it as actually an infusion of electricity into the body.
It's very true, and certainly in this day and age, the body is really considered a chemical makeup, but actually the electrical is pre-chemical.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You could look at the university text, Principles of Cell Biology is one that I have here, and all the equations at the beginning of the book, they've all got E minus, in other words, electron. Each of the chemical equations showing that there's electron transfer and this is what's causing the reaction. And then by the time you hit third and fourth chapter, they've dropped the E minus out. You don't see that anymore. It's all concentration on the chemical aspect. Well, it's actually the electron that's doing the work. It's like a speedboat going by on the horizon, and then 5 minutes later, the waves come in and they lap the shore, and the chemists are all running out there, and they're measuring the height and the amplitude of the waves and the direction, et cetera, and getting all their information. But they don't even see the speedboat. It's long gone. And it's the same thing with the electron. It's very it's extremely quick. These things are happening in the body. It's unbelievable speed. There are probably, in any given second, there are probably a billion reactions in the body. Any second. So it's unbelievable to try and contemplate exactly what's going on. So they just ignore that part of it and just look at it as chemistry. Better living through chemistry, they used to say. Well, unfortunately, as we're finding out, it's massive death through chemistry, and their approach doesn't work, and we bury the people every year. They're saying now that they're well over 350,000 people a year are dying from drugs. this is properly prescribed and properly taken prescription drugs. So that's an enormous slaughter. This equals the total number of men lost in all your wars. This is every year this is happening. It's just incredible to think that this is the sort of thing that's going on and people don't even notice. Recently, there was huge scandals with Big Pharma faking their clinical trials. Dr. Scott Rubin in Massachusetts did clinical trials for Celebrex and Vioxx and Bextra. And, of course, we know all the problems those have caused. And all the trials were faked. He just wrote it up. And they take it down the FDA and they rubber stamp it and away they go. And a really big bunch of people have to die in a hurry before they even look at it. And meanwhile, the companies have made, you know, a couple $1 billion off it, and it's back to business as usual.
I absolutely love that comparison you just made to the speedboat. When you look at it like that, of course, the chemistry can't save the situation because there are too many mitigating factors that have to get isolated. It's a good idea, perhaps, but when you look at the pieces that have to be addressed, it becomes a quick impossibility.
And if you talk to any senior, anybody past 65 is probably taking half a dozen to a dozen meds. And there's no way that they can test a dozen different drugs together.
Exactly.
Because they don't know what effect is happening. Total 100% experimentation.
The obvious reason why socialized countries, for instance, like Cuba, have ozone is because its efficacy. It just is an inexpensive modality for helping a lot of different situations. And you just mentioned why it acts at a very primitive, in a sense, electrical value system.
Mm-hmm. Very basic. It's the underlying motive force. Yeah, it's true. The Cubans are very advanced in ozone therapy. Of course, they learned from the Russians. Fidel was very much in favor of ozone, still is, and set up the Ozone Institute of Cuba in Havana. And they held their conferences there, etc. And they're world leaders. They published dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of scientific papers every year. I asked Dr. Sylvia Menendez, who is in charge of their ozone program for the whole country, I asked her, how many ozone generators do you have for the 10 million people you have on the island? And she said, 38. 38 ozone generators for 10 million people. She says, yeah, we don't need any more. Every 6 months, we have the technicians go around and they check all the machines, make sure everything's working right, calibrated.
And odds are they are still calibrated correctly. The machinery doesn't change.
Yeah.
It doesn't break down.
Exactly. And so, like, just think of that, 38 machines for 10 million people. And if you go there for something, whatever your problem is, you're going to get ozone 9 times out of 10. There are world leaders in treatment of retinitis pigmentosa, glaucoma, all the various eye problems. There are world leaders, and lots of Americans go there, but they have to go via Mexico City.
Right. Well, already they're going to Mexico, and we should... Honestly, give a big kudos to Germany because, you know, for instance, clients of mine would come in and they say, oh, ozone's like toothpaste in Germany. Everyone uses it.
Exactly.
So you are a Canadian and you are fresh off a government scare, so to speak. And I would really like to do sort of an around the world with you with the politics of ozone. And so tell us about what happened just recently to you, and then we'll move into some other things that are going on around the world.
Yeah, well, the way it works here is they act on complaints. There was a disgruntled customer. His wife passed away, so he wanted all his money back, and that wasn't going to happen. So he went to CBC.
CBC stands for what?
CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting.
Okay.
It's like PBS, but it's not the same because PBS doesn't get out there with an axe to grind. I mean, you know, you might say that they show things that other networks won't show because they're more left-wing, but CBC isn't quite like that. So this guy went to CBC, and so they came around with their cameras, and they chased us around for a couple of days with me with the kids in the car and everything. Eventually, they put this thing on the national airwaves, and it was full of complete misinformation because they're getting their cues from the College of Physicians and Surgeons. Eventually, about 6 months later, we got a letter from the Commercial Competition Bureau. They sent out a letter, and it was 3 pages, and we read through it, and I took it to my lawyer, and I said, what exactly are they saying? He said, well, I don't know. We'll write them a letter and see if we can get clarification. So So we wrote him a letter, and this was back, I guess, beginning of June, and never got a reply. Just basically asked him, what are you saying? So that was been the sum total of it as far as that goes from the government side. And like I say, you know, they don't have a heck of a lot of money, so the tiger only gets up when somebody pulls his chain. That's been it, and nothing has happened since that time. The only other fallout is, of course, the customer then went on the internet and said nasty things there. So, regardless of that, that's been the sum total of it. So, there was the one raid back in 1999, December of 99. They raided, and that was on a complaint from a doctor. And then there was this letter, so-called. And that's been it. So there's really been, pretty small potatoes. As opposed to what happened in California in January, Applied Ozone Systems there in Auburn, California, was raided by FDA, and they seized all their stuff. So I guess they're out of business.
And so that was fairly recently.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that raid was in January. And this has been an FDA pattern since the 1930s. When they initially set out, AMA poked them and said, okay, you need to get these guys off the radar here because the drugs are coming in and we don't want this competition from electrotherapies. So since that time, and here it is, 75 years later, the FDA is still out there seizing machines, still claiming there is no proof, still claiming they're dangerous, still claiming it could cause people not to seek standard treatment, which I guess would be drugs that can kill you. So, it's the same shell game.
In defense of your insights, California also just outlawed room ozonators / purifiers and negative ion purifiers. And I know Alpine is a good company. And you told me earlier that you felt like they kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Yes. And they did this by, I was an Alpine dealer. Way back in 93, what they were doing was saying, look at all the wonderful benefits of ozone, and they were presenting the information of medical ozone, which was true information, and then they said, now here's our machine. Well, that's bait and switch. You cannot do that. They're giving an air-fed, air delivery system for ozone that's not a medical therapy. There are 24 accepted methods of ozone delivery into the body, and breathing raw ozone is not one. And I was opposed to it then, and I quit being a dealer then, and they did not cease and desist, and FDA went after them repeatedly. Even FCC went after them for claims that were unsubstantiated, et cetera, on and on. And you should not really be breathing large amounts of raw ozone on a regular basis, because the lungs are not meant to handle that. You can take ozone into the body in 24 accepted methods, but not breathing large amounts of raw ozone. So what I would have liked to see in California would have been a law saying that you had to have a timer on the thing so that you could turn it on when you weren't home, and so it went off half an hour before you got back, so that it's not putting ozone into the air while you're there. That's the thing. So it's great to be running it all the time, as long as you're not there breathing large amounts. So that's, because they couldn't get that sort of agreement from any of the manufacturers, they just said, okay, well, you can't have any of them. Now, of course, that doesn't stop anybody from getting them. That just puts it on the law books.
Right. and it remains to be seen
if laws stopped things, people from getting things, there wouldn't be any drug problem with their...
Yeah, really. And I was sort of under the impression that the government, the big they, did have other things they really had to spend their time doing, and they were less likely to come after doctors or alternative practitioners that are doing ozone. Now, it is legal in certain states. I know Colorado, it is legal, and so...
Or in 14 states, it's legal.
Yes, but that number has not grown lately.
It hasn't. They sort of stalled out, and I think that there's got to do with the economic problems that have beset the United States in the last couple of years, and caused, of course, by the banks. But that has shifted the focus in the legislatures, and there was a group or several groups going around state to state and saying, okay, this is a state's rights issue because the state licenses the physician. Therefore, the state gets to say what the physician can do, not the FDA. This overrides the FDA. This overrides the feds. So a lot of states said, hey, yeah, we agree with that. So they were passing this legislation. Now, that's kind of stalled out, and I think it's due to the focus. You know, the states are broke, let's face it. And I think their focus has become much more economic in these tougher times.
Right.
And therefore, this is kind of, you know, hasn't gotten any traction in the other states. But assuming the economic situation levels out, although it's kind of looking like it's going the other way these days, then they, you know, hopefully this group will get back in action and get more states signed up.
Right. Well, Ed McCabe has written a rather definitive book on ozone therapy, and it goes back a few years now. But he does talk about someone who tried to get ozone used for the AIDS epidemic in Africa, and he was pointedly told or maybe even escorted out of the country. And I'm wondering if you know about that or the approximate year that was, and if there was a sign.
Yeah, it certainly happened in Kenya with Basil Wainwright in that would be probably 1998, I guess. But, you know, the problem is this. If you're going to have if you're going to have a therapy that you're going to be using and you're going into another country, you have to be working with the government there. You can't just parachute and say, okay, well, we're going to set up here and we're going to cure everybody in sight and it's not going to cost anybody anything, and then start charging people thousands of dollars. That's the problem. And they were also, they were very slipshod in what they were doing. They had a technique that they'd actually snitched from the Russians where they were taking blood out and ozonating and dripping it back. Well, they were doing massive amounts. In other words, they were doing like all the blood in the body. So in order to prevent the blood from coagulating on return to the body, they were putting in heparin, which is standard practice. But it means you're using massive amounts of heparin because you're dealing with all the blood. Therefore, you're putting a huge load on the liver. And the only person that ever died from ozone therapy in Canada happened in Vancouver in 1993. Were just on simple autohemotherapy, and they overdosed the amount of heparin in order not to give him back a clot because the blood comes out. He wants the clot immediately. And he bled internally and passed away because of that.
Right, so it was not the ozone, it was the heparin.
It's not the ozone, it's the heparin, exactly. So the idea is, like, don't take the blood out of the body. That's a dumb thing to do. This is standard German practice, and they will take out 300 cc's and ozonate it and then drip it back. And they're using a pre-heparinized flask, so you can't screw that up. However, they still put a filter on it in case there's a clot so that it doesn't deliver the clot back to the person. But the much easier method is, if a doctor is going to administer, is to do ozonated saline. Now, this was developed by the Russians, who were looking at the high cost of autohemotherapy, which is the taking the blood out, ozonating, and dripping back, the German technique. And they said, well, we don't need to do that. We can just leave the blood in the body, and we can administer the ozone in saline solution. And that's their standard protocol now, and all their research is done using that technique. And they get the same results as everybody else, but it's hugely cheaper. An autohemotherapy kit is over $150 now, and versus the ozonated saline, and you throw away the needle, 25 cents. So there's no comparison. There's no comparison in that. And the safety is every bit as good. In fact, maybe even better, because no chance of a clot, because the blood stays in the body. And you're not administering a gas, you're administering a liquid. You know exactly what you've got in your syringe, no guesswork there. And the ozone is actually dissolved into the saline. It's not just riding along, it's actually dissolved.
So is it better?
I'm
sorry, is it better? Do you think the absorption, because it's in the saline solution, is better, perhaps, than other?
Well, I think the most important thing is, I think the absorption is probably the same, but I think the most important thing is that you don't burn the vein as much because the ozone is in solution. You're not putting in gas, and therefore the vein is saved a little bit more than it would be the other way. But I think the results are the same.
Yes.
And certainly the doctors that I know that are doing the ozonated saline, they say, yeah, we have no problem doing that. It's we haven't changed our protocol, and it's we're getting the same results, and it's so much easier.
Yes,
so much cheaper. This is the kind of technique that they need in third world countries. You know, not this autohemotherapy or recirculatory hyperfusion, they call it, or polyatomic apheresis. They got lots of different names, where they take out all the blood over a period of time, ozonate it all, and drip it all back, you know, that circulating thing. You don't need to do that. Just administer the ozone into the vein, and it would be so cheap, 25 cents a shot. Here we go.
Yes. So the EPA has done a whole lot for ozone being kept in the closet because they say, oh, bad ozone day, don't go outside mm-hmm. today. Could you just give a very brief but concise reason why that doesn't really speak to what really is going on?
Well, the it's a natural system for oxygen to be produced by plants on the surface, and for the oxygen to rise up through wind, etc. The oxygen rises up, and then when it contacts, it gets up to about, say, 10 kilometers or, you know, 10 miles up, and then it's getting energy from the sun, and that energy knocks the oxygen molecule apart into two O1s, and then they glom onto the next oxygen molecule, makes O3. So then as that's now heavier, so considerably heavier, so that wants to fall towards the Earth. So as it's falling down, it's cleaning the air. Everything it contacts, it oxidizes, and it takes dust particles out and takes out smoke, takes out anything that's in the air that shouldn't be there, the ozone will take out as it's falling towards Earth. Now that's what's happening in the atmosphere, and that's a natural cleansing process that was designed by, I guess, the creator, because it's due to the chemistry of the weights of the molecule that it falls back. So that cleans the air. Now, at ground level, you get hydrocarbons. Now, hydrocarbons are actually produced by trees. Reagan was ridiculed 30 years ago for saying that trees cause smog, but actually it's not incorrect. There are hydrocarbons that are released by trees, but not nearly as much as released by the internal combustion engine. So at any rate, as it's coming earthward, then you're getting these combustion products from vehicles, and those products are all made with oxygen from the air. So the car takes in air and uses the oxygen to burn its hydrocarbon fuel and then spews out the nitric oxide and sodium dioxide, et cetera, on and on. And these things, as they come into the atmosphere, when sunlight hits them, it will knock off an oxygen off them. So the NO will become, some of it will become N, and then N2, or depending how it goes. And then some of the O will become O1. And that temporarily will give you a higher level of ozone in the air. Of course, it's very reactive, so it wants to react with something, so it attaches itself to something else. So this is an ongoing process in this soup that's created from the pollutants coming out of the engine. There is no ozone produced in the internal combustion engine. It can't be done. Wish it could be. That would solve the problem. But it can't be done because the fuel quenches the spark gap. You make ozone with a spark gap, but the hydrocarbon fuel quenches that, so there is no ozone created in the engine. But in the air, the pollutants will be temporarily split by sunlight, and there will be ozone there. Now, if there was more ozone, there would be less pollution. So it's not a question of there being too much ozone there. It's doing what it can, but there isn't enough of it. So if you had big ozone generators, you wouldn't have big smog. You would have cleaner air. But, of course, they'll never do that. So ozone is very easy to measure in the air. They have these little ozone meters, and they can, you know, for $20, they can test it in the air and say, oh, there's too much ozone. And then they have an ozone alert. Well, it's garbage. It's a smog alert. And smog is smoke plus fog. The nomenclature is all incorrect. It's smoke plus fog, and it has got nothing to do with ozone. The fact that ozone's there is just because the sunlight is knocking singlet oxygen off, and if there was more ozone there, it would be better, not worse.
Right.
So, still not something you want to breathe, but there you are. It's not, you can't blame ozone for the problem.
What cautions would you have for people who wanted to find out and perhaps start doing ozone therapy?
Well, it's easy to buy ozone machines. They're all over the place. I mean, eBay and whatever you want to look for. it's easy to buy them. The thing is that getting good information how to use it is hard. It's like computers. You can buy computer clones now for like $300. But when you go to use the thing, you plug it in and it says load operating system. And then you're forced to go to Bill Gates. I mean, we're not talking about Mac. But then you're basically forced to go to Bill Gates because without that operating system, you can't run the computer. Well, it's the same thing with an ozone generator. You get your nice little $300 Chinese ozone generator home, and you go to plug it in and say, okay, how do I use this thing? And there's no real instructions. They might tell you how to ozonate water if you're lucky, but in general, not much information. And that's where you have to have information from either manufacturer or some other source in order to know how to use it. How are you going to do insufflation? How are you going to bag a limb? How are you going to do all the various protocols? And this is what I've been doing for the last 18 years now, is educating people on how to use ozone so that you can do the protocols, know what you're doing, understand what the heating crisis is, understand what to do about it, understand about nutrition and what to go along with it. So I've written a couple of books about that, and they're available. I give them away to people who are interested. And I also run an email list. I used to run it on Yahoo Groups, but then found out that they hold copyright and everything there. So I moved off of Yahoo Groups. And now I have just a Hotmail account, and I do I answer people's questions there. But, understanding how to use it.
And Saul, I would have to interject here that the way that the machine is regulated as far as how much ozone to oxygen mix, I think is the most key piece. So the reliability of the equipment you get is key.
Mm-hmm. And it's very important to have an idea what your concentration is. A lot of the Chinese units will come, and they're not calibrated. You don't have any real idea exactly what you're getting at various flow rates. So you need to know what you're getting, and you need to know that your machine, even if you got it set wrong, isn't going to hurt you. You'll find there are lots of super-powered ozone generators out there, and they'll put out ozone that'll burn a hole through you. The considered medical maximum for ozone therapy is around between 70 and 80 micrograms. You don't want to be doing anything higher than that. You get into immune suppression there, and you can get into actually burning of internal tissue. So you don't want to be super powered. I make a cold plasma unit that's based on Tesla's ideas from the 1900s, and the great advantage to it is that you get a good amount of ozone. You can get your 30 micrograms at half a liter. But even at 1/32nd liter, you can't get above about 65. It's just inherent in the design. It will not go beyond that. I've tried. And that is as much as it can do, so it can never hurt you. And that's a very important thing, because everybody that comes into ozone is a newbie right off the beginning. There's all kinds of people who are emailing me all the time. I had this set on 10 at 1/32nd, and I don't feel so good. Well, of course, you've given yourself a super high concentration of ozone, and it's not good. It's not good. It's a question of the dosage is very important. The concentration is important to the effect. So these are things people need to know, and that's why I wrote my books, and that's why I answer questions on email.
Saul Pressman can be reached at plasmafire.com. The film Ozone and the Politics of Medicine will be shown here at 4700 Walnut October 6th at 7 p.m. for a small donation. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.org. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.